Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. According to the environmental group Greenpeace, tar sands development in Canada is scarring the land, polluting the air, and using twice the amount of water used by a city of 2 million people. With state officials approving plans for a tar sands project here in Utah, activists worry about a similar fate. And today on the program, we're talking about the issues presented in the Greenpeace film Petropolis. Joining me in studio is Melanie Martin. She's an activist who works with Utah's tar sands resistance and peaceful uprising. And Melanie, good morning. Thanks so much for your time.
Good morning, Jennifer. Thanks for having me here.
Also with us, Spencer Tripp. He's director of communications at Greenpeace Canada. He's producer of the film Petropolis, and he's joining us by phone. And Spencer, thanks so much for your time as well.
Thank you, and good morning.
Utah Tar Sands Resistance is sponsoring a tar sands discussion tonight, October 31st at 6 o'clock here at the City Library, 210 East 400 South in Salt Lake City. And a free screening of the film Petropolis will start at 7 o'clock. And you can join our conversation if you've got questions or comments about tar sands development, the possibility of it coming to Utah, questions about the activity in Canada. Give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Spencer, I'll start with you. According to your website, you say that Canada's tar sands are an oil reserve the size of England. It's the world's largest industrial energy project. Exactly what are tar sands?
Well, it's an oil deposit in northern Alberta, which is a prairie province in Canada. And the oil's been there for many, many years, millennia, really. It's just taken this long to really sort of get at the oil because it's been very expensive. So it took a long time for them to actually develop a process to actually extract the oil. But now that we've sort of hit that point and it's now profitable to invest in it because the price of oil is so high, we're seeing massive growth development in the tar sands area. And it is true that it is an area the size of England, but of course not all of it is under development at this point. It's growing at an exponential rate, but we're not quite there yet.
How much energy is being produced from the tar sands in Canada?
I think it's 1.5 million barrels of oil per day is headed to the U.S., and it's going to a bunch of different places, but it's an awful lot of oil, and they're trying to amp it up more and more, which is why we're seeing more pipelines being discussed, because without those pipelines, they can't actually get the oil out to these markets, but they're certainly investing billions of dollars into the developments that are there.
Melanie Martin, can you describe what we know about how tar sands are being extracted?
We know that they're using a very devastating strip mining process. It scrapes away the land, the forest. Out in eastern Utah, where they're planning to mine, there's very dense forest in some areas. So basically, they're just scraping away all the life and turning it into this barren wasteland of rubble, just like what's happening in Alberta. And they try to tell us that it will be a completely different situation, that they'll rehabilitate the land, but that's just not possible.
Spencer Tripp, the subtitle to the film Petropolis is Aerial Perspectives on the Alberta Tar Sands. I understand much of the footage was filmed from a helicopter flying over tar sands sites. Since this is a radio program, could you describe some of the visuals in this film? What is the landscape? How has tar sands extraction changed the landscape in Alberta?
Yeah, well, at first, we had to go, up into the air to just get a sense of the scale. From the ground, you can't really sort of get that perspective. There's also an issue, of course, of being on the properties of the different oil companies. But once you get into the air, you sort of really get a sense of the scale of the devastation and how big these, open mine pits really are. And, of course, all that wastewater that you mentioned in your introduction, all that wastewater ends up going back into these open mine pits. So, for instance, several of these larger, older open mine pits that have been sort of more fully developed get filled with all this toxic water and are actually visible with the naked eye from space. So they're huge. They, you know, once you're in a helicopter, and we shot at about 1,000 feet because that was where, you know, public airspace began over these, you know, different developments. From 1,000 feet, it was as far as the eye could see. So, you know, you had to actually, you know, move around and go from one big pit to one big, you know, toxic lake to another, you know, big industrial complexes sort of spewing, you know, toxic chemicals into the air. I mean, it is very, it's a very visceral experience, I think, is what we tried to capture in the film.
We're speaking with Spencer Tripp. He is Director of Communications at Greenpeace Canada, producer of the film Petropolis, Aerial Perspectives on the Alberta Tar Sands. Also with us in studio, Melanie Martin, an activist who works with Utah Tar Sands Resistance. Utah Tar Sands Resistance is sponsoring a tar sands discussion tonight at 6 o'clock here at the City Library, 210 East 4th South in Salt Lake City. They are also providing a free screening of the film Petropolis starting at 7 o'clock. If you've got questions about what's going on in Canada in terms of tar sands extraction, you can call us. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. I want to play a clip from the film. This is an expert, Dr. Kevin Timoney. Before we hear the clip, Spencer Tripp, maybe you can introduce us to this expert.
Sure. The excerpt that you're about to play is actually one of a series of different webisodes or clips that aren't actually in the film, but accompany the film as sort of additional information. And that's because Petropolis itself is actually almost a silent film. It really just sort of presents the tar sands to your naked eye and allows you to sort of judge and draw your own conclusions and sort of come to the material. We didn't want to be very sort of preachy about it. We just wanted to let the camera do the work. So Kevin Timoney is a water expert in Alberta, and he's just sort of been very involved in terms of you know, collecting samples and sort of monitoring the water in the area, because of course all these toxic lakes that are there are leaching into the local waterways.
All right. This is an excerpt, a webisode from that accompanies the film Petropolis, produced by Greenpeace Canada.
Many, many records indicate chronic and serious levels of sulfur dioxide or hydrogen sulfide or particulates or nitrous oxides in the air with very little or no evidence of anything being done by the government. Very clear evidence that the tailings ponds are leaking, and the government knows that they're leaking and seeping into, causing groundwater plumes of contaminants.
That's from a webisode accompanying the film Petropolis. Spencer Tripp, tell me a little bit about the air emissions, the pollution that accompanies tar sands extraction.
Yeah, I mean, there's you know, we haven't, you know, focused on that as much, but of course, you know, if you're in the area, you know, there's a lot of, you know, particulates and different toxic chemicals that are being spewed out of the local industry there. Now, not all of the oil is being refined in the area. So this is one of the sort of funny things about the tar sands, is that you're actually sort of exporting a lot of the pollution by having the oil, the crude, piped to different places as far away as Texas, and then having it refined there. So you're actually getting a pollution effect that is sort of quite distant from where the oil actually started. But yes, in the area of the tar sands, you know, in Alberta, you know, we're seeing all sorts of different, you know, sulfur and different pollutants that are going out into the atmosphere. You know, flying above the scene there for at 1,000 feet, I mean, you're just sort of struck by, you know, that, oh my God, it smells, you know, just as much at 1,000 feet as it does on the ground, because there is this overpowering sense, smell of sulfur everywhere, which is a byproduct of their process.
Hmm. Why did Greenpeace get involved in this topic? What kind of brought it to your attention, Spencer Tripp?
Well, it's certainly the fastest growing source of greenhouse gas emissions in Canada. For the Canadian government to get serious about climate change, it has to address the tar sands, and we're certainly very active in that campaign. So it was really from that standpoint, but of course we're also very interested in the local human health effects, people that are, you know, drinking that water downstream, breathing the air, and really, you know, investing and subsidizing an industry that is preventing us from actually switching over to more cleaner, renewable energies. And that's a real problem, you know, in Canada and globally.
Speaking with Spencer Tripp, Director of Communications at Greenpeace Canada and producer of the film Petropolis. Also in studio, Melanie Martin, an activist who works with Utah tar sands resistance. Melanie, what got you involved in this issue?
A lot of it comes down to water for me. Just like in Canada, the Green River and the Colorado River would be polluted with dangerous carcinogens and other substances that cause mutations, birth defects. The same exact problems exist here. And when I learned that the Bureau of Land Management is considering leasing out hundreds of thousands of acres in Utah for tar sands and the very similar oil shale mining, I became very, very concerned about the health of the people in the state and downriver, even in Mexico, and also our water levels. I know that this process uses vast amounts of water, and we just don't have extra water rights to give away.
I understand, though, that the State Water Quality Board okayed this proposal because they say there's no groundwater there on the site to pollute. Melanie?
Well, actually, it's kind of funny that a group of people from our organization were out at the site a couple of weeks ago, and it rained, hailed, snowed on them. They woke up with the ground soggy, and so they experienced quite a bit of water out there. So the DEQ itself has not gone out and been doing the testing. They're relying on company reports, and of course, the company is very biased. Not wanting to claim that there is groundwater present. There's an aquifer below the surface, and water does continue to flow if it has any pathway to flow. So the water would obviously contaminate the aquifer or contaminate the rivers leading out to the Green River. Sorry, contaminate the stream beds, the streams leading out to the Green River and then to the Colorado.
I want to get our callers in on the conversation. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. We're speaking with Melanie Martin, who works with Utah Tar Sands Resistance. They're sponsoring a discussion about tar sands development, the prospect of that here in Utah, tonight at 6 o'clock at the City Library, and then they'll be screening the film Petropolis, which starts at 7 o'clock. Petropolis is a film produced by Greenpeace Canada, and we've got Spencer Tripp, the producer of the film, on the line as well. 801-355-TALK is our number. And let's go to Rafael from Salt Lake City. Rafael, hi.
Hi. Melanie started to answer my question. I was just concerned about the water. And I know in Canada that they use a lot of water to do the process there. And in Utah, we have such a shortage of water. I mean, aside from the contamination factor, where are they going to get this water and how much water, you know, are they going to use a different process than they use in Canada?
Melanie, do you have answers to those questions?
As far as where they'll get the water, I've asked scientists or people from the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, where the water would come from, and they've said that they don't have the answers. I don't think that they can say right now, because I believe the water would have to come from agriculture or from people, from tribes, from somebody else who has to pay the price.
What's the experience in Canada, Spencer Tripp? Remind us of the volume that of water that's required for tar sands extraction in Alberta.
Yeah, it's 2 to 3 barrels of water per barrel of oil. So it's an incredible amount of water. And when you think about it, you know, water is such a valuable resource to waste it on the production of oil is rather incredible. And then the one thing that I wanted to add too is, you know, in addition to, you know, where the water comes from, is what do you do with it afterwards? You know, in Canada, they have water cannons being fired around the clock 24/7 to keep wildlife away from these, you know, giant toxic lakes, because they are so toxic that the moment, you know, a bird flies into it or an animal goes up to have a drink, they die. I mean, it is, you know, incredible to think that, you know, you're not just going to have be taking water out of the local aquifers and local water systems, but you're actually going to be having something very deadly, you know, that's left there behind.
Rafael, thanks so much for the call. 801-355-TALK is our number. We're talking about tar sands in Canada, the extraction process there. The result, according to Greenpeace, is devastation to the landscape. 801-355-TALK if you'd like to join us. Jessica's joining us from Salt Lake City. Jessica, hi.
Hello.
Go right ahead.
You know, I just wanted to maybe speak to the point that you're talking about water, and the company itself, U.S. Oil Sands, is actually saying that they are going to be using water from the direct area to aid in their mining process, which seems completely contradictory and completely at odds with the fact that they're saying that there is no water in the area. It just seems to me an out-and-out lie on their part. I'm just wondering if your guests could speak to that.
Melanie Martin.
Yes, they plan to use water from the Mesa Verde Aquifer, which is directly below the mining area, so it is exactly at odds with what they are saying. Somehow they seem to look at nature in a very compartmentalized way, thinking that what lies below the surface is somehow not connected with what's above, even though an aquifer by nature is recharged by precipitation. Water is not just isolated below the surface in some sort of little pocket that's not connected with the rest of the ecosystem. The company obviously doesn't have a very holistic and accurate view of ecosystems.
Well, clearly we're going to have to do another show with the company's viewpoint. But Jessica, I guess you share Melanie's concern about this, about tar sands development.
Absolutely, I absolutely do. This is a completely destructive process. There is nothing about this that I think anybody in this state should be in favor of. This is going to decimate that area. It's going to be completely irrecoverable. And I mean, so many parts of Utah are unique in the world, and the Uinta Basin of Book Cliffs is one of those unique areas. Not only just the beauty of it, but the life that exists out there that we are putting at danger. It's heartbreaking to think that this is going to be completely and utterly lost.
Jessica, thanks so much for the call. I want to play another short clip from Dr. Kevin Timoney. And here he's talking about the public input in Canada. Let's take a listen, and then, Spencer, I'll get you to respond.
What I did was I filed what's called a routine disclosure request for all of the tar sands companies from as far back as the government had records. There were over 6,000 incidents of air pollution events or leaks of tailings ponds or spills or fires or leaks of freon or spills of sewage, etc. Some cases there may be 3 or 4 or 5 incidents in a given day. And why is the public not aware of this?
I guess that's my question for you, Spencer Tripp. I mean, how are Canadians reacting to the tar sands development in their country?
Well, you know, it's a hard question to answer, I guess, because you know, Greenpeace, I guess, is an influential organization, but we certainly don't have the dollars and reach of you know, all the major oil companies that are in operation there, and a federal government that is, you know, very much in bed with them. So, you know, they're really changing the landscape of Canada and spending millions and millions of dollars to convince Canadians that this is a good thing. Our dollar has really become, you know, tied to the price of a barrel. So the price of oil goes up and the Canadian dollar goes up, and that's just sort of the reality right now. But it's a finite resource, and, you know, I think people want to, you know, look further ahead than, you know, just the construction jobs that are here today and then gone tomorrow. But the whole thing, you know, Jennifer, just really doesn't, you know, make sense to me on many levels. And I think we have to ask ourselves, you know, why are we going to pursue this, pursue oil to the very last drop? In the 1960s, when it was still very, you know, expensive to extract the oil, they wanted to detonate a nuclear bomb underneath the soil to melt it out. Right now, we're spending, you know, 2 to 3 barrels of water per every barrel of oil, and there's talk about building nuclear power plants to be able to fuel the process to provide it enough energy. So can you imagine actually building nuclear power plants to produce another form of energy? I mean, it's madness on a grand scale.
Spencer Tripp, we're going to have to leave it there. Spencer Tripp with Greenpeace Canada, Melanie Martin with Utah Tar Sands Resistance. The film is Petropolis, being screened tonight at 7, a discussion at 6 o'clock here at the City Library. Thanks to you both. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce.